Welcome to MBA Podcaster, the only source for cutting-edge information and advice on the MBA application process. I'm Janet Nakano. Company executives are constantly faced with making ethical decisions, and we often hear of the ones that weren't so wise. The heads at Hewlett-Packard are being challenged for unethical investigative measures. And we're all familiar with infamous corporate scandals like Enron, Boeing, and countless others. Meanwhile, business schools have stepped in so that future corporate leaders can be prepared to make better ethical decisions. This time, we'll explore why ethics is becoming the hot topic and why that corporate accountability course can serve you in the future. We'll hear from a dean, an ethics professor, the head of a program that surveys schools on social and environmental management, and we'll also hear from the executive director of an ethics research center.
Support for MBA Podcaster comes from Veritas Prep, one of the world's leading GMAT test preparation and admissions consulting providers. Everything about the Veritas Prep GMAT course has been designed to enable students to confidently approach the exam with a deep understanding of the material, not with tricks or devices for merely surviving the GMAT. And Veritas Prep's thorough curriculum is just the beginning. Only people who have scored in the 99th percentile on an actual GMAT exam are even considered for an instructor position with the company, and every new instructor must complete over 100 hours of training before leading a class. Veritas Prep's MBA admissions consulting services feature head consultants who have formerly served as admissions officers, application readers, and interviewers at the world's top MBA programs. MBA Podcaster listeners receive a $150 discount on any Veritas Prep GMAT course, private tutoring, or admissions consulting school package by registering with the code POD150. Learn more at veritasprep.com.
Studying business ethics is probably not the first class that comes to mind when thinking about getting an MBA. Kirk Hansen is executive director of the Markkula Center for Applied Ethics at Santa Clara University. He says ethics discussions are vital to companies, but not all MBA students realize that.
With executive MBAs, good reception, mixed reception often among MBAs, and I think that's because of their relative lack of business experience. They don't understand as clearly as more senior executives do how ethics indeed plays a critical role in the success of the company and a role in the success of one's career. But over time, there's a growing interest and a growing demand for ethics courses from MBAs as well.
The Beyond Gray Pinstripes program at the Aspen Institute surveys MBA programs and ranks business schools on how much they integrate social and environmental management into the curriculum. Judith Samuelson is the program's executive director.
There's really a gap between what's going on in business and what goes on in business education. Business increasingly is under scrutiny by the public for consideration of the social and environmental impacts of their decisions and the degree to which that they think about the purpose of their activities and the context in which they operate. And there's a big gap between the level of consciousness in business today, particularly those big brands that have been pummeled by activist groups and that are looking to secure supply in markets of all kinds of complexity. It's a big gap between the kind of state of art, if you will, in business, the state of play around the role of business and the responsibilities of business globally, and what's actually going on in business education. Business education tends to be focused on much more simple measures of business success.
Samuelson says they track and research coursework of over 100 business schools around the globe. Although they send out surveys to all MBA programs, not all respond.
Of the top 10 schools, one of the things that's kind of interesting is that out of the top 10, only 6 of them were actually in the United States. And we tend to connect business education in our minds with the U.S. because it's such a major business here, and we have so many students that come from around the globe to seek an MBA education in the U.S. But this year, of the top 10 schools, there was one in Canada, there was one in Spain, one in Mexico. And the highest-ranked school this last round was a very prominent school, was Stanford Business School in California. And they're doing a terrific job of creating both opportunities for students as well as making sure that there's exposure to the critical questions in their curriculum.
George Washington University ranked number 6, and the Haas School came in at number 11. Samuelson says all companies seek employees that are going to operate with integrity.
I think there continues to be a bit of a disconnect between the skill set that companies seek for entry-level MBA students and when they think that these issues will actually matter. Well, let me say a little bit more about that. A consulting firm or an investment bank, and those are two large employers of MBAs, at least in the more elite end of business education that provides lots of employees for those two industry sectors. They tend to be looking for students who have very specific kinds of functional skills, from analytical skills to financial skills, because they know that the positions that those students are going to fill off the bat are oriented to their analytical needs. So they're not stepping back and saying, but gee, what are we going to need? What is it we want the student to understand 10 years from now when they're actually managing the department? What do they want them to understand when we put them in an overseas office and they're figuring out the franchise to operate in China or in another part of the world where there may be conflicts over values or conflicts over priorities? And so it's a balancing act to recognize the skill set that students need to get their first job and what are the attitudes and values that we need to instill to make them a successful employee over the long haul. And that's a balancing act that the best students and the best schools are interested in.
Paul Danos is dean of the Tuck School of Business at Dartmouth College. Tuck has required coursework on ethics and also offers students a chance to be involved in a series of discussions on various corporate ethical issues.
It's no doubt that the whole concept of ethics and integrity among business people is a very important topic since the Enron era, where you had a lot of scandals and they're still playing out in the courts, etc. I think students are much more sensitive to this now, and of course, the whole society is much more sensitive. I just think that it's something that we have to keep emphasizing because, it's one of the foundations of good management. You've got to have integrity and you've got to kind of understand the context of some of these problems, because even a person with integrity, if they don't see these problems in context, may not recognize them. So I've known people that have gotten into trouble because they didn't recognize the problem. Other people, of course, are outright dishonest. Well, of course, they can always find ways to be dishonest. What we want to make sure is our students, for the most part, the vast, vast majority, have good ethical standards, but we want to make sure they understand the context and know how to work through these problems.
David Vogel is a professor of business ethics at the Haas School of Business at the University of California, Berkeley. He teaches a course called Ethics and Responsibility.
We do talk about the case on Enron, but I prefer not to focus on clear black and white cases. In this case, it would be a black case. But try to focus on issues and cases in which the right thing to do is ambiguous, in which reasonable people can disagree. So what it should be the extent and limits of corporate responsibility. How do you handle issues of sexual harassment? How do you handle issues, when the cases are ambiguous? How should British Petroleum think about its corporate responsibility vis-a-vis climate change? Is it doing enough? Is it doing too much? We talk about Nike and its responsibility for labor conditions. What should they do with child labor, in which you have a situation in which someone is told that these families will be destitute if they follow the corporation's code on child labor? So we try to focus on areas in which there can be reasonable room for debate and give students the analytical tools to think a little more clearly about what the right thing to do is.
This is MBA Podcaster. Stay tuned to the rest of the program after a brief word from our sponsor. Support for MBA Podcaster comes from the MBA Tour, organizing more than 165 MBA events in 28 countries, where admissions directors from prestigious business schools and talented MBA applicants meet. The MBA Tour's conferences are currently taking place in Canada. Stay tuned at the end of this show to hear from the MBA Tour about the special considerations that applicants from Canada should consider when thinking about attending a foreign business school. Log on to our website, mbapodcaster.com, to learn more and hear similar specialized podcasts for applicants from Asia, India, and Latin America. The Margulis Center's Kirk Hansen also taught business ethics at Stanford for 23 years. He says MBA programs started to implement the study around 1978. What worried business schools at the time, he says, were incidents like the 100-plus companies that contributed illegally to the Nixon re-election campaign. Hansen says company attention over the last 30 years has evolved slowly from a compliance to a values orientation.
Compliance orientation is one where the company is concerned primarily or solely with getting employees to obey the law. Many companies, if not the majority, still have that focus, and the ethics program is run perhaps by the general counsel or by an assistant general counsel. In an increasing number of companies, and certainly the leading companies, there is more of a values approach in which the company defines what its ethical values are, and then working with its management and all employees, figures out how those values get implemented in the many decisions that the company takes. For example, the whole concern about the ethics of the supply chain, sweatshop labor in Asian factories and so on, comes out of that values approach. We want to treat our employees well. That's one of our values. We want to treat the employees of our contract manufacturers well. So then it's to be consistent with our values. We don't contract the production of our tennis shoes or our clothes to factories where workers are treated very poorly.
Hansen says two social movements in business are influencing companies to act more responsibly.
The social investing movement began really in the early 1970s when some nonprofit organizations, some church groups bought stock in General Motors and urged General Motors to address environmental concerns and issues of operating in South Africa much more directly. This led to a movement for responsible investing, that one ought to invest only in companies that do act ethically and socially. And that today involves billions and billions of dollars of invested funds that use what are called social or ethical screens to pick their investments. Universities typically have guidelines such as no tobacco stocks, or no companies that operate in Burma, Myanmar, and so on. So the social investment movement has become a fixture of financial investment in the United States, and most finance students who are interested in investment management try to get some exposure to the social investing phenomenon. It does apply pressure to the investment community.
Hansen says the other phenomenon in business is currently the hot topic of study in MBA programs. It's called social entrepreneurship, and schools are rushing to add courses on the study.
This is a term which encompasses everything from nonprofit management, which there's a considerable interest amongst MBAs in managing nonprofits and foundations, to the socially oriented activities of for-profit firms. Maybe a firm like Ben & Jerry's or The Body Shop, which has explicit social objectives as well as profit objectives, but also social activities undertaken by companies like Cisco, which has created these worldwide learning academies that are helping people become much more technically sophisticated and capable of doing technical jobs around the world. Or cause-related marketing, which many companies have undertaken to promote social causes as a part of their marketing strategy. That range of things has been called social entrepreneurship and has become a phenomenon in the last 5 years in business schools. It is the hottest subject, even more so than ethics and other fields, and schools are now, MBA programs are now scrambling to add social entrepreneurship courses to their curriculum. Again, Harvard and Stanford, perhaps because of their relative wealth, have had the capacity to get very quickly into those areas. But the other school which has a very strong presence in that area is Duke. Northwestern and other schools are also experimenting.
What's in the future for corporations and the study of ethics? Hansen says businesses will certainly operate differently.
I think there will be two developments over the next 20 years. First, we will understand in a much more sophisticated way how general managers manage the ethical culture or the culture of integrity of the organization. The SEC, for example, is asking questions about how do we define and encourage corporate concern for tone at the top or the creation of an ethical culture. Can we audit that as a part of Sarbanes-Oxley? So I think there'll be great progress made in that area. I think anyone who studies leadership or general management or top management 25 years from now will spend a considerable amount of time examining techniques for managing the culture of the firm for creating values like innovation, but also for creating an ethical culture. And then the second phenomenon is that management will be seen as a much broader phenomenon which addresses social issues, and I think we will have defined much more clearly the techniques that make social entrepreneurs successful, either what makes nonprofit managers successful or foundation executives successful, or how companies can address social causes at the same time they are also pursuing profit-making purposes. There's a new concept called the triple bottom line, that the corporation addresses multiple objectives. Its bottom line is not just narrow financial performance, but it's also social and environmental performance, and that those become important. And I guess that maybe we should add a third trend. Environmental performance of every organization on the globe will be a dominant concern 25 years from now.
Support for MBA Podcaster comes from Veritas Prep, one of the world's leading GMAT test preparation and admissions consulting providers. Everything about the Veritas Prep GMAT course has been designed to enable students to confidently approach the exam with a deep understanding of the material, not with tricks or devices for merely surviving the GMAT. And Veritas Prep's thorough curriculum is just the beginning. Only people who have scored in the 99th percentile on an actual GMAT exam are even considered for an instructor position with the company. And every new instructor must complete over 100 hours of training before leading a class. Veritas Prep's MBA admissions consulting services feature head consultants who have formerly served as admissions officers, application readers, and interviewers at the world's top MBA programs. MBA Podcaster listeners receive a $150 discount on any Veritas Prep GMAT course, private tutoring, or admissions consulting school package by registering with the code POD150. Learn more at veritasprep.com.
For more information, advice, and to register for your weekly MBA podcast, visit mbapodcaster.com. I'm Janet Nakano. Thanks for listening. And next time, we'll talk about why so many students in the U.S. are traveling abroad for their MBA. Now stay tuned to hear from the MBA Tour, an MBA touring organization that connects applicants and schools. This time, we'll be discussing the special considerations that applicants from Canada should consider when applying to U.S. business schools. Visit our website, mbapodcaster.com/MBA Tour, for more information. I'm Janet Nakano with MBA Podcaster, and I'm here with Peter von Lessica, the MBA Tour's CEO and Managing Director. The MBA Tour runs more than 165 international recruitment events in 28 countries, including 3 cities in Canada. The events connect quality MBA candidates with top global business schools to help applicants research and choose the right program. Peter von Lessica will be giving us recommendations specific to Canadian applicants looking to apply to top U.S. and European business schools. We also have specialized podcasts for applicants from Asia, India, and Latin America on our website, mbapodcaster.com/mbatour. If you're living in any of these territories, be sure to visit our website to hear strategic advice and also find the dates for upcoming MBA tours in your area. So, Peter, Canada isn't too far from the U.S., is it?
Well, you know, I should say that the big choice for Canadian students is, do I want to go south of the border and spend a lot more money with schools that probably will connect me more in the United States than in Canada? So that's the big choice.
Well, what about the Canadians that do want to study in the U.S.? What advice do you have for them?
Well, for Canadian students, the big issue for them is, and they need to think seriously about this, is where they want to be placed after graduation. And also the cost, of course. If they choose to go to school in Canada, the cost will be much less than if they choose to go in the United States. The benefit of studying in the United States is that many of the schools, the top schools, have a very good international reputation, as well as Canadian schools, but their placement records are very strong in the U.S. in particular. And if they want to work for an American company that will offer them a career, say, in brand management, then they probably would have better connections through American schools to work, say, at a Procter & Gamble in the U.S. than they would from a Canadian school in working in the U.S.
And do Canadians have any visa issues coming to the U.S.?
No, there are no visa issues. And after NAFTA, the rules for working in the United States are much relaxed than they are for students coming from outside Canada.
Are there specific areas of study that Canadians are better off studying in the U.S. or Europe, like certain fields they want to venture into after graduating?
I think that if a Canadian student is looking for a particular industry, and of course Wall Street was the first to come to mind, if they're looking to be placed on Wall Street and want a firm that's going to put them on Wall Street, then I think their best option is to look to a school in the United States with strong connections to Wall Street placement. I mean, if they're just looking for to be placed in the financial industry, then Canada certainly offers many options. But a lot of prospective students look at Wall Street experience as very good experience on their resume, and I think American schools that have those connections would be the best option. The same holds true for other career placement, that if you're looking for something in brand management and you want to be close to where some of the big decisions are made globally for some of the big marketing firms that are U.S.-based, then obviously a school that has good connections to U.S.-based firms that are doing global brand management would be a great option. If you're looking for more international experience in, say, the area of brand management, then I don't think that's as true. For example, if you're looking for brand management in Latin America, then you could probably do well at any one of the business schools.
Are many Canadians interested in European business schools?
Yes. Canadians are very attracted to the European schools. The one big disadvantage American schools have over Canadian schools, obviously, is the tuition. And that's the same with European schools. And European schools offer very strong placement records with very strong connections into top-notch European firms that can give them the same experience as somebody wanting to go on Wall Street, but if they want to go to London to be working in the financial profession over there, then schools in London would probably have very good connections, and the same with schools in elsewhere in Europe.
And finally, when will the MBA tour be in Canada, and what are some of the highlights of the tour?
The MBA tour will be in Canada starting October 30th. We have an event in Vancouver, and then November 1st will be in Toronto, and November 2nd will be in Montreal. All three events will start with panel discussions on the admissions process, and then individual school presentations, followed by a fair where students have open access to admissions officials. The panel discussions on the admissions process will give Canadian applicants good insight into the application process in North American and European schools and what's important in the application process, so they have the edge ahead of people that don't attend these events. And the fair will, at the end of the day, will give them access to the admissions people directly for one-on-one contact.
That was Peter von Lessica, the MBA Tour's CEO and Managing Director. If you're interested in attending one of their international recruiting events and want more information, visit themba.tour.com. You can also visit our website, mbapodcaster.com/mbatour, to hear more specialized podcasts for applicants from India, Asia, and Latin America. I'm Janet Nakano for MBA Podcaster. Thanks for listening.
Support for MBA Podcaster comes from QS World MBA Tour. Here are four reasons you should consider attending the upcoming tours. 1. Meet face-to-face with 27 of the top 30 U.S. schools on the tour, as well as all the top European and Canadian schools. You're sure to find a school that's right for you. Top schools attending include Wharton, Cambridge, INSEAD, UCLA, and over 200 more. 2. Get expert advice. We've got a great lineup of workshops and panels to give you the inside story on the admissions process. Entry to business school this year is set to be highly competitive, so the tour can improve your chances of success. 3. Attend sample classes. There's an exciting lineup of professors from the top B schools whose masterclasses will give you a taste of life in an MBA program. 4. Apply for $1.1 million and more in exclusive scholarships, only available to visitors to the QS World MBA Tour. Schools want to meet candidates just like you, and the alumni at each fair can give you a real sense of the personality of a school, as well as the ROI of their own investment. So tell your friends, and don't forget to register at topmba.com.